This is Lord Death of the DWMA, and you're watching another episode of Goth Geek Podcast. Now stay tuned, or I'll be forced to give you a Reaper Chop. And I mean it.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 47 of the Goth Geek Podcast. I'm Nicholas, and I got my co-host here, RS.
Hello everyone.
So on today's episode, we're going to discuss the 30th anniversaries. What does that mean? Well, we're going to talk about movies.
Well, yeah.
Obviously, I guess. I mean, I guess we can talk about 30th anniversaries of, I don't know, history, maybe? But that's not really what this podcast is about. So we're going to talk about movies. So we've got a couple of big ones this year. Unless you've been living under a rock, you've probably heard about the first one. The Nightmare Before Christmas is celebrating 30 years.
Well, people might be living under a rock because, you know.
I guess that's true. But most likely, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a goth geek. So you probably have heard the news either from Disney or from the theaters themselves or somebody.
Or now from us.
Or yeah, maybe you're getting your news from us, which is, I'm sorry. Because we're definitely not posting these episodes enough for that to be a concurrent thing. But yeah, 30th anniversary of Nightmare Before Christmas. We've talked about this movie quite a few times on the podcast. It's a Tiddler like movie for goths. What's the word I'm trying to think of here?
That's not the word.
No, it's not. It's definitely not the right word at all.
A cornerstone.
There we go. That's the terminology I was trying to think of. Yes, for goths, I feel like. Am I wrong on this?
You're not wrong. I mean, if you're for a movie wise or for, because I was thinking maybe like Adam's Family would be the cornerstone for goth.
Depending how old you were, I guess. But I mean, both movies have their place, but I mean, Tim Burton is, especially for our generation, like the epitome of goth. When it comes to goth movies, you think of Tim Burton, at least for us, for our age, because you had Batman, the 1989 Batman movie, which was very goth. Gotham was super dark.
You're going to hear our age, people, and I'm sorry.
You have what? Beetlejuice, which came out in the 80s as well, which was a very goth movie. I mean, how many boys and girls had crushes on Lydia Deetz because of how goth that character was and whatnot? You have Pee-wee's Playhouse really isn't goth, but it's got.
It has echoes of goth.
It does. And I'm going to throw this out there. It's not really a hobby, but rest in peace, Paul Rubens, who passed away recently.
Absolutely.
That was very sad news. I mean, he played that character very well. And surprisingly, if you didn't know this, he had movies and cameos as Pee-wee as recently as, like, I think 2014, 2017. Yeah. Like, he was doing a lot of work, and he kept this health issue under wraps. So I guess kudos to him on that. But, yes, rest in peace. He will be sorely missed.
Yeah,
but Tim Burton's movies were the epitome of goth in the 80s. I mean, goth was, I don't like saying it was born in the 80s, but because I feel like goth's been around forever. But when you think of goth, you think of the 80s. And Tim Burton's movies happened in the 80s. Like his good, like I don't want to say good ones because he has tons of good ones even still, but his core goth ones came
in
the 80s.
So you like Beetlejuice and like.
I mean, and then the one we're talking about, Nightmare Before Christmas, 1993, that's only 3 years into the new decade of the 90s. That was a passion project of his.
Okay. Was it?
Yeah. We've talked about this off the podcast.
But I know.
We've seen the documentaries. And
yeah, I know.
It was a passion project. It was something he really wanted to do for a very long time. Disney was being an asshole about it.
And he had one foot in and one foot out, so.
Well, he was busy doing other stuff. I mean, he had Batman Returns about the same time.
Yeah.
which is not on this list for 30th anniversary movies. No, I can't remember when Batman Returns came out. 92, maybe? I thought it was maybe 90? I don't know.
Let me look.
But Nightmare Before Christmas, while RS looked that up, Nightmare Before Christmas took a long time because it was claymation. And if you've ever seen any of the documentaries, you know. But I feel like it is a cornerstone for kids our age. Because 1993, I was 12. And I remember this movie briefly. It wasn't in theaters for very long.
Batman Forever?
Batman Returns.
Batman Returns. It was 1992.
92, so just a year before. So that's part of the reason why Tim Burton was kind of one foot in, one foot out for the Night Before Christmas, was because he was too busy directing Batman Returns.
And that's why there's such a contention about who actually did it.
True, because you had the director, because it wasn't directed by Burton. It was actually, I mean, the story was written by Burton. It was his idea.
It was his idea, yes.
The poem he wrote was his, basically, yes. The short story, however you want to word it. But it was definitely directed by someone else. I can't remember the name of the director.
The poem it was based on was someone else, or was his, but someone else wrote the screenplay, someone else directed it, someone else.
He had his hands on with it. He still wasn't involved with it, all that stuff.
Right. I mean, but it came through a fax, and he would come in, and everybody was hands on deck when he came in, and then he would leave, and then it would be up to them to decipher what he wanted. So, yeah.
Still his.
Still. We'll agree to disagree on this one.
What do you guys think? Do you guys think Tim Burton should get all the credit that he does for Night Before Christmas? Let us know at our new email address, which I'm going to drop right now. thegothgeekpod@gmail.com. So thegothgeekpod@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. Does Tim Burton deserve all the credit that he gets for The Night Before Christmas, or should the credit get spread around? I mean, Danny Elfman gets a lot of credit for the music, of course.
Which he should.
I mean, him and Burton are like Burton and Depp. Like, they team up a lot. But, that was definitely directed by somebody else. The screenplay was either written or co-written with Burton. So was Burton really as hands-on? You know, it's all the things you used to be able to buy. I don't think it says anymore. We just bought the new version of it. Well, does it still say Tim Burton's Night Before Christmas on it, or does it just say Night Before Christmas now on the Blu-rays?
Give me a moment.
We just bought our fourth copy of the Night Before Christmas. This is the new 4K Ultra HD version of the... RS is going to go find it and hopefully not screw up too much of the sound with the microphone. But we have four copies of it, but I can't remember if that copy has... It says Tim Burton's Night Before Christmas on it or not. But yeah. Even if it doesn't, a lot of the other ones do. A lot of the older, the older copies definitely had, it said Tim Burton's on there.
It still does.
Oh, so okay, so even newer copies. So we have the Steelbook copy that's like the Disney 100. This isn't a plug for Best Buy per se, but it's exclusive to Best Buy. So if you're interested, go grab one of those copies because it's the Ultra 4K edition of Nightmare Before Christmas, because you can never have too many copies of Nightmare.
Just be aware that you might get some dents in it because it's a steel. we went through that a couple times. Anyways, they're beautiful, so don't let that push you off. But
highly recommend it.
Highly recommend it.
So should Tim Burton get all the credit that he does? Let us know. gothgeekpod@gmail.com. So that's celebrating 30 years. It's being re-released in theaters. Disney's even finally embracing it after all this time. They're doing special stuff.
Yeah, they're doing El Capitan.
Yeah, at their theater in Hollywood. They're doing special posters, it look like, and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. And then some of your local theaters are probably having this as well, so
depending on when you're listening to this.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this 6 months from now, then
probably not.
You might have missed out, and hopefully you didn't. So We've talked about the biggest one for goths, in my opinion. Like, Night Before Christmas is the biggest one. I don't know how else to put it. It's the biggest goth geek one. I mean, everybody sells, especially this time of year during Halloween time, they sell Night Before Christmas stuff everywhere. Walgreens sells Night Before Christmas stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another one that's celebrating 30 years that I was surprised by, and I aged like 10, 15 years just reading this because I just didn't think about it. Another goth cornerstone, and as RS had said, maybe a little more of a cornerstone, Addams Family Values hits 30 years. The sequel to the Addams Family 1990? Yeah, 1990? Film with Christina Ricci. Another probably adolescent crush for many goth young goths or who became, or what is it, the awakening of goth for a lot of young kids probably was Christina Ricci as Wednesday.
Yeah. Some of us.
Or ooh, Gomez.
Or Gomez. I had a crush on Gomez.
Raul, I can never pronounce his name. He played in Street Fighter. He was the big bad guy, M. Bison, I think. Now I have to look that up. But yeah, he's a looker. He was a looker. He passed away quite a while ago, unfortunately.
Which is why they went to Tim Curry, I do believe, for the third one. Well. Third one.
We don't talk about the third one. It's like Indiana Jones. We don't talk about the fourth Indiana Jones. We don't talk about the third Addams Family movie.
Right. Raul, that didn't exist.
I'm still going to butcher the poor man's name. May he rest in peace. Raul Julia. But yes, I can understand. I'm sure many had a crush on him as well. Just looking at some of his pictures. But yeah, Street Fighter, 1994, Street Fighter. He was in The Rookie. But, I mean, again, for goths of our generation, he will always be Gomez Adams.
He was a great Gomez Adams. He embraced that role, and he did it justice. And
with Angelica Houston as Morticia?
Yeah, she was great as well.
She really was.
She went through such pain doing it. Like, for those of you who don't know, they had her wear a headband that would actually lift her eyes because they wanted her to have a slant eye look. So she would get terrible migraines after about 45 to minutes to an hour and have to get some rest. So every time she's in the in a scene, she just realized that she's wearing this head thing underneath her wig that slants her eyes.
Which can't be comfortable.
No, obviously it's making her have migraines.
Like, even without the migraines, I can't imagine it being very comfortable, but the things the actors do for their craft is, I mean, that's, I'm not going to diminish it because that still sucks that she had to do that. But at the same time, I mean, some of the makeup that people have to put on, actors have to do, it's crazy. What was I going to go with on that? So Addams Family, going back to Addams Family Values, I was looking at Raul, and I always have trouble saying that name, Julia, in his career. He didn't have a lot of big movies per se. Kiss of the Spider-Woman in 1985.
Those are all big movies. They
big movies probably to that to certain people, I'm sure. Cult movies maybe even, but like the Morning After with Jeff Bridges and Jane Fonda he was in apparently. Frankenstein Unbound. I mean, he has quite a career. It's just movies that like I don't recognize. I don't think many of us would recognize as, you know, bigger movies. Tango Bar, The Organization. Yeah, a lot of these are movies that these are movies that definitely we would not have known for sure. His bigger, more well-known movies, mainstream movies, so I guess the better word would be Addams Family and Street Fighter, which is kind of, I feel bad because Street Fighter is one of those movies that is, I guess it's got a cult following now. And actually, Street Fighter will be celebrating 30 years next year, 1994.
That's funny.
but yeah, M. Bison was the character he played. But anyways, going back to Addams Family Values, a very strange movie, considering it has it's a summer movie, but has a Thanksgiving.
Oh yeah, Thanksgiving to embrace the American ideals.
Yes.
Have the Thanksgiving morale or Thanksgiving story in it.
It's probably actually aged pretty well, considering.
Actually, yes.
Because I was thinking about it, and it's all the kids that are considered weird or rejects or however word you want to use, and there's like one that's handicapable and one that they cannot pronounce his name because he's from like East India or something from that region or something.
Yes.
Along those lines. And again, I'm not trying to be offensive. I'm just trying to remember the movie from my own horrible memory. Like they said, like they make a joke of it. Like he's like Rajesh, like they're trying to, like they can't pronounce his name. But in today's very woke world, society, where we try to be very cautious and very understanding and equal, the movie was kind of before its time in that aspect, I guess.
Yeah, it really was. I think that we could probably learn from this movie, and I think we haven't. I think maybe we can learn from some of the movies that have proceeded from us, and we haven't, so.
Very true, very true. It has the two camp directors, which are also really good. They're actors that you don't really think of, but then you see their face and go, oh, I recognize them from such and such. The camp director, the male camp director, most would recognize him from Ghostbusters 2, so he's kind of a sequels guy. I'm going to make that joke. He played the art director that gets possessed and tries to steal the baby.
Oh, yeah. He was great in that.
I'm trying to find his name on the IMDb here of all the different actors for Addams Family Values. But, and then Christina Brzezinski was the female art director. Oh, Peter McNichoe.
We're doing really well at...
I cannot read people's names. I apologize to these actors, though I doubt they're listening to our little podcast. But I apologize to all the fans of these people who are like, what are you doing butchering my favorite actor's name?
Who are like, please stop.
I apologize for that back down noise. That's our dog Olive shaking her head. Apparently she doesn't agree with my mispronunciations either. Peter McNichoe? Yeah, let's go with that. He was also in Big Bang Theory. He played the professor that was the recluse that had the theory that Sheldon and... Oh, my brain's not working well. But he's one of those actors that like you recognize when you see him. And then Christine Barinski played the female one, and she's, again, one of those actors that like, you recognize. She was in Mamma Mia, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. She was the one with all the money and had married several times. And,
yeah, yeah. And she's been in a couple of different movies. I mean, a lot of movies and sitcoms.
So many movies.
But they play really good, and I don't. And this is a compliment to their acting skills. They play really good, out of touch white people, probably racist.
Probably racist.
They never outright say it, so I'm going to say probably, because we don't 100% know if they are. But when I say we don't 100% know, we're like 90% sure they are. They're the kind of white people who are like, oh, I'm not racist, but then they say something instantly afterwards that's racist.
I don't see color.
Yeah.
I don't see color.
They're the ones who like say things like "All Lives Matter" and bullshit like that. And they play those characters very well. Truly do. It's a fun movie for sure. And it's, again, because it's the Addams Family, I feel like it's a epitome of goth childhood.
Yeah.
Now, we also have a future heartthrob, and that's the movie Wednesday's love, crush, mm-hmm. future victim. Joel Glicker is the character's name, and it's played by David Krumholtz, which you'll know from such amazing movies such as Serenity. He plays
Mr. Universe.
Thank you, because I'm horrible at remembering names. And then it wasn't a sitcom. It was a TV series that you and I both watched, Numbers.
Numbers, yes.
Yeah, and he was great in that.
Oh, my goodness.
And he's a good-looking guy. Like, he's a looker. Like, you see the movie, Addams Family Values, when he's, like, 12, and you're like, okay, yeah. And then you see him as an adult, and you're like, wait.
That's the same guy?
It's like the Longbottom in Harry Potter with the actor. Yeah. Like, he grew up to be a very handsome guy. But let's talk about that a little bit. So so she gets kind of a bit of a crush, a bit of a love interest for Wednesday, and that was a little bit different for compared to the cartoons. And
yeah, but she tries to distance herself away from that instantly.
She does, but she can't seem to help it. She and by the end of the movie, she's, you know, he's dressing like Gomez, and you know.
Yeah, but she's also trying to kill him. So, well, there's that.
That's going to happen. He just has to get quicker on his feet.
Yeah, I don't know if he survived that or not.
I like to think he did, but we'll never know because they rebooted the whole series and system, or, yeah, well, not series, but they rebooted the whole thing, and now Wednesday on Netflix is, you know, the current canon.
Well, they
can
continue it.
They could have. Christina Ricci's an adult now. She could have easily taken over and...
Well, she did.
She had a cameo. If you haven't watched Wednesday, which we talked about Wednesday already on here, so you should have hopefully by now watched this. But yeah, she plays the bad guy, basically, or one of the bad guys in the Wednesday series, which has the worst Morticia. But we're not talking about that. We're not talking about the worst Morticia.
Or the worst Gomez.
You know, he looks like Gomez, though, as far as for the cartoons go.
He does look like Gomez.
Charles Adams' drawings, he looks like Gomez.
He does.
I don't fault him. I do fault her.
Why?
Just the way she acts. I don't want... Catherine Zeta-Jones, one, is a good actress, but her delivery of being Morticia just fell flat for me. And I completely admit that it's just a me thing, probably, but I did not like it.
Okay.
I just did not like her as that. Like, I just watched the new National Treasure TV series, and she's a bad guy in that. And I had no problem with that. She did a great job portraying a rich, bad person who's trying to take over a secret society. Spoilers if you haven't watched this underground show.
I have not watched this, and now I am offended.
Right?
Why did you do that?
It's not a secret.
I'm kidding.
I was going to say it's not a secret. And then I guess the most controversial part about this movie that's hitting 30 years is at the very end, they have, or no, the very end of the first movie, so in the second movie, they've already had the baby. So yes, the Addams Family character that never existed.
Right.
But now we have this baby Addams.
Right.
I don't know. Did they really need to add another Addams character to
this?
They
had already alluded to it in the first one, so they had to add it in the second one.
Yeah, true, but did they have to in general? Did they have to plan out, like...
A baby?
Yeah. Did we need to add another Addams Family character in the grand scheme of things? I mean...
Yeah. They have the next progression.
I guess. I do like the fact that, again, and... Maybe it's not exactly as progressive as we think, but they really don't give the baby a sex. They're just like, it's an it. At the end of the first movie, like they're like she holds up like the spider like weird thing like with like five legs that shows that she's pregnant, and even the beginning like the second movie, like Wednesday and Pugsley are really just like not really referring to the baby as a he. Even though it's got a mustache, which doesn't really matter one way or the other. Like, lots of people can grow facial hair. So it's not really a gender per se, but I guess I do, Morticia and Gomez do refer to the baby as a he. But still, it's somewhat progressive, in my opinion, for the early 90s. Again, kind of like the camp scene with all the outcasts and different kids kind of banding together and whatnot.
Right.
The fact that they showed that. But I still don't know if they really needed to have a baby. Needed to add another character.
They switched the entire grandma. Why would they not add another character?
Well, the grandma was always there, though. She was in the cartoons and she was in the comics.
They switched grandmas between movies.
I think that's because she died.
I know.
Pretty sure the first one died. like Dumbledore.
They gave her a more substantial part in the second movie.
They did. Carol Kane, which is also one of those actors who, like, you see and you're like, I recognize her voice or recognize her, and you don't know where, kind of thing. So those are the first two movies that are hitting 30 years that are very much epitomes of goth culture, I feel like. Would you agree?
Yes. Now, are we going to switch to your favorite?
My favorite? What's my favorite?
The one you sing every time the garage door opens?
So, Jurassic Park is hitting 30 years as well. Again, if you're living under a rock or something, you may not have heard about this, but most likely you have, because it's a big deal. And yes, I hum the theme to Jurassic Park every time I open the garage door when we're leaving. I can't help it. It's a big door. It opens up. It's like Jurassic Park. One of these days I'm going to get a thing. I'm going to get a technological thing.
Oh, no, you won't.
And it's going to get attached to the garage door so that it just plays it whenever it opens.
No, you won't.
It's going to be great.
No.
So Jurassic Park, 30 yes. years of dinosaurs. The original first one before all these Chris Pratt ones came out.
Do you not like the Chris Pratt ones? Just getting it out there.
I have issues with them. I haven't seen the last one yet, so I can't say anything about the last one.
Why do you have issues with the Chris Pratt ones?
I think I have issues with Chris Pratt at this point.
Okay, is it personal or is it?
He kicked my puppy once. No, it's very personal. No. I like Chris Pratt overall as an actor, but I feel like he kind of plays, for the most part, the same characters. He doesn't really have a very large range. The fact that he was the voice of Mario in the Mario movie really bothers me a lot. But as far as Jurassic Park goes...
I've seen that. You can't say anything.
I've seen enough of the previews. I'm just saying it's weird, because he's supposed to be an Italian plumber, and yeah. Chris Pratt's not... That boy's not Italian. Not even close. But that aside, going back to the Jurassic Park movies, the first one was good. The remake, Jurassic World? No.
Jurassic Planet? No.
Jurassic Planet. That sounds like one of those cheap sci-fi knockoff ones. Jurassic Planet.
I don't know.
Let's see.
Jurassic Park 2, take 2.
Sorry,
everyone. It's been a long day.
Jurassic World. Yeah, Jurassic World. Okay, so Jurassic World from 2015. That one I liked okay. I mean, it was basically a rehash of the same, of the first movie, just on a larger scale and with a genetically altered dinosaur.
Or two.
And Bryce Dallas Howard running in heels and doing crazy shit in, like, a white power suit and heels with a T-Rex.
I mean, you can do that.
It was impressive. I'm not critiquing that part. I just think it's impressive. And it was one of those things that was very meme-worthy at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
but the second one, Jurassic World to the Revenge of something. No, I don't know actually what it was called.
The Revenge of the Sith.
The Revenge of the T-Rex. That one, Fallen Kingdom? Fallen Kingdom. Because Dominion was the third one. Fallen Kingdom, I saw, and I was not a big fan of it. The story was not that great, in my opinion. They had a goal, and they were just trying to get to that goal.
Right.
And which was Dominion. Dominion was their goal, getting dinosaurs to the rest of the planet. So, no, I wasn't a big fan of those. But going back to the original, 1993, Jurassic Park.
Right.
We got our Dr. Grant, and we've got the mathematician Ian Malcolm.
So the original bad idea, yeah.
I mean, don't be wrong. I mean, it made Jeff Goldblum like a sex symbol, which is pretty impressive because he's already like, he's pretty sexy at, he's like in his 60s now, 70s.
That man is so confusing.
He's a very strange man. If you've ever watched The World According to Jeff Goldblum on Disney Plus, I know, you were like, are we actually going to get an episode where we don't mention Disney Plus? No, you're not. And I truly, he's a strange
man. We're sorry.
He's a very strange man. But it's undeniable that he is a very good looking man, especially for his age. He's got it together. But he plays Ian Malcolm, which is the mathematician. Alan Grant. We got Ellie Sattler, Dr. Grant's like partner and on again, off again love interest. And then, of course, our mad genius, Dr. John Hammond.
Yep. And we have the kids, too.
The kids. We have our future villain, Dr. Henry Wu, who shows up in the Jurassic World series. And then, yeah, we've got the kids. Joseph Manzillo, who plays Tim Murphy. Little Tim. Timmy. Yep, I said it. And, of course, Wayne Knight, who plays Dennis Nerdy. Samuel L. Jackson, who plays Ray Arnold. That's another thing. If you've never seen Jurassic Park, if you're somehow younger and somehow still listening to this podcast, and you have not watched Jurassic Park, it's got Samuel L. Jackson in it. A very young Samuel L. Jackson, who unfortunately is the token person of color. Token...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wouldn't say person of color, because you have Dr. Wu in there. But he's definitely the... I'm going to say that this is a term that really is kind of gone out, which is good. A lot of movies don't have this anymore. But back in the 90s, you had a token black person.
Yeah.
Just to, like, try to make it look like, you know, PC.
And try to look that you have diversity.
Yeah, and he was literally the only black guy in that entire movie. Whole thing. And it's a whole bunch of white guys, and then there's Samuel L. Jackson, and then there's B.D. Wong, who plays Dr. Wu.
And then there's one woman and one girl.
Yep. Yeah, so it's a... Representation was not doing well in the 90s. Heck, again, going back to the Addams Family Values, that movie had more representation for people who were disabled, even though it was only one handicapped person shown, but still, that was more than being shown in the 90s, especially for technically a family movie.
Right.
But then they had people of color in that movie, kids of color in that movie, so forth and so forth. And for considering the Addams Family is very, let's be honest, white, it was a very somewhat diverse movie.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it like that because we're white. I've said this before on this podcast. We're white people. So we have no place to be saying one way or the other about how much diversity anything should be in a movie. What was that?
Anything.
We really don't. And just like, I'll get off my soapbox in a second, but we just want to make sure that everybody understands that, you know, goth is the same thing. Goth, you know, it doesn't matter what color your skin is, you know, your ethnicity, your background, you can be goth. You can be a geek. You can love everything and be yourself. Doesn't matter, because you're you. That's all that matters. Yeah. But yes, back in the 90s, as many of people of our generation remember, most movies had at least one token, unfortunately, black person. And I say unfortunately because they should have had more. They should have had more diversity. But Samuel L. Jackson was that. It was one of his earlier roles. Not his earliest role. His earliest role was actually... Do you remember? Do you know this one?
No.
Coming to America.
Oh, I forgot about that.
He plays the gunman that tries to rob the McDowells. And Eddie Murphy takes him out.
That's right. That is right.
But, I mean, he has a decent-sized role. Decent, I say. With, like... quotations
Didn't
in there.
Did he die?
He does. But he's like a computer hacker. or not really hacker, but computer IT person that like helps try to get the systems back on. And, you know, at least he doesn't play like, you know, something more cliche or, you know.
The person of color dying is pretty cliche.
That was another thing, yes. He was basically, people of color in the 90s were basically, early 90s and 80s were basically red shirts for Star Trek, unfortunately. He does die, but Dr. Wu doesn't die.
That's true.
Because he gets to be the bad guy in the next movies.
Do you think he starts going, what did I do?
I would hope so. I really hope he has like a turnaround in the third movie. Like eventually I'll watch it, or we'll watch it.
Or you'll watch it.
Because you don't want to see it.
I don't want to see everybody be bombed. I don't know how you're going to get out from under this. Like
just living with dinosaurs.
Right.
So he might have a turnaround. But it is interesting that he goes from like a this scientist who is helping crack the code to clone dinosaurs in the 1993 movie to by 2018 he's the supervillain basically who's genetically altering dinosaurs and selling them in the black market, which is what part of the plot is in the second movie. This movie was amazing. When I was a kid and saw this movie, I remember being like everybody else probably, and like especially the scene when like Dr. Grant and Sattler pull up on the Jeep and Dr. Hammond shows them the dinosaurs for the first time, the Brachiosaurus, I think. Don't say it too much, we'll get sued. But that scene in 1993 was amazing. What about you? Do you remember Jurassic Park? Like, were you a fan?
I was. It didn't get me into studying dinosaurs, obviously, but it did jumpstart the
paleo diet.
No. That entire branch of study again.
Well, I remember like there was a lot of news stories going, is this possible? Can we get
right.
You know, can we get DNA from
And a lot of people went back into science because a lot of people right. went back into STEM.
Like Star Trek, those movies and TV shows inspire children, and Jurassic Park inspired a whole new generation of paleontologists, I think is the word you're looking for.
Paleontologists, thank you.
Archaeologists probably to a degree. And probably, like you're saying, yeah, STEM, scientist, cloning, I mean.
Now we have an embryo that can withstand for 14 days, and probably longer, but they are not allowed to do it, per science, which I'm not getting into whether that's good or bad, but it is able to be done, so for stem cells.
Yeah, stem cell research is a whole other topic and a whole other podcast.
Which you're not going to find here.
Yeah. If you came here for science facts, we can give you like simple science facts, but we're not going to get into the murky waters of is stem cell and embryo and cloning, is that, you know, right? Is it morally okay?
You've come to the wrong place.
So were you a fan of the first movie? I mean, because let's be honest, again, we're talking about the 90s. The 90s were very also sexist. Jurassic Park was very much advertised as an action flick, a boys flick. And again, I don't believe in this stuff. I don't think it's right. But in that time period, that's what it was focused on.
I know. Yeah, that's because girls were supposed to wear, let's get real, and boys had the cool shirts.
Yeah, yeah. Lisa Frank was the big thing.
Oh,
in the
God. I want a unicorn that looked like colors were just thrown up on. I'm sorry for anybody who loves Lisa Frank. It is a cool looking thing, but if that's all you have, I start to look and start to resent it. That makes sense. I think it makes sense. I hope I'm getting my point across correctly.
So you were a fan then?
I was a fan.
Did your parents take you to actually see the movie, or did you have to wait until it was on VHS?
You have to remember, my mom took me to Ghostbusters when I was way too young to go to Ghostbusters.
Okay.
So, which is probably why I'm a fan of ghosts.
That makes sense then, for sure.
Yeah, I was in the back seat hiding, but I am still a fan of ghosts.
Jurassic Park was a good movie for the time. For even now, it holds up for the most part. It has real effects. This is before CGI was a bigger thing.
Yeah, I mean, some of it doesn't hold up. If you watch it, you're like, and they've changed some of the what the dinosaurs look like from
scientifically, right?
Scientifically, and what they did to Yadi Yadi, the differences between what they look like now and look like then was scientifically engineered what they look like.
They
now.
Were already altering it. Basically, they tried to fix their issues by saying, and again, if you've seen the 2018 movie Jurassic World, then you heard this yada yada portion of it. And they basically were saying that, oh, Hammond was already genetically altering things when he was doing this. That's why the velociraptors are as big as they are, because real velociraptors are only like 3 feet tall.
Right.
He was mixing it with like Utah raptor or something. You know, they were, as you're saying, yada yadaing it. They were Star Trekking it by, you know,
right.
whatever they could do to explain the inconsistencies.
Well, because science moves slower than Hollywood. So, what we know about dinosaurs is constantly evolving, but what Hollywood knows about dinosaurs is constantly evolving in their heads as well, faster than the human creativity moves faster than science.
Very true, especially when it comes to things like archaeology, because you're really going based off fossils, I guess.
Right. Discover in the...
Yeah, you can't really... You don't know if they had feathers unless you have imprints, basically. You're right.
You have to find the imprint in order to discover that.
So, yeah, it makes sense. And then also there's a little bit of creative license with Hollywood, because 3-foot-tall raptors would have not been nearly as scary as the 6-foot-tall ones that could open doors.
Look you in the eye.
Yeah, exactly. They could open doors and that were apparently super smart. Even though in reality, raptors were like chickens, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were like terrifying chickens, but they were still chickens.
And later they had feathers.
Yeah, that's right. They did, didn't they? As they were evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm probably incorrect on some of that. So if you know more than I do, which you probably do, you can correct me by going to gothgeekpod@gmail.com and letting me know how incorrect I am on what I just said about velociraptors and their size and being like chickens, horrifying chickens. So Jurassic Park was not a goth movie by any means, but it was very influential, especially for future scientists and future archaeologists.
It was a geek movie.
It was a very geek movie. It's in our zeitgeist.
Which is why we're talking about it.
It's in the name, geek. And the goth geek part. But before we wrap up this episode, there's one more movie I want to talk about because it's very much in our zeitgeist for goth as well as geek. And it started a whole renaissance of a subculture that still reverberates today. Like, you can see these people at cons and at renaissance festivals. And
Sims?
Yes. No, the Sims video games have been going strong since the, God,
I know.
90s? 80s? Yeah. Probably 80s, SimCity?
Yeah.
Somebody correct me on that. But no, Pirates. So June of this year, so just a few months ago from this recording, Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl, came out 20 years ago. And again, it's one of those movies that when I heard this news, I had to get a cane and I had to get a can of like squished up prunes And Stop just, it. It was just horrible news to hear that 20 years ago, Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, came out.
Do you know where you were when they came out?
I do. Oh my God. I can actually, I don't remember exactly the night per se, but I do remember I was living in Prescott, Arizona at the time, and we went to a Harkins Theater, which is a local chain here in Arizona. And went with probably 2003. So I might have had a few friends with me. I'm pretty sure I did. I didn't have a lot of friends at that point. I had just moved up there a little bit ago. And it changed my world. That movie was I already liked Pirates before. Don't get me wrong. I was 22 years old. Exactly. Again, Disney will sue us. Don't do it.
I only did a few.
But I remember it very well, because at 22, I was still very impressionable to it. You haven't really found yourself in your early 20s quite yet. And so that movie came out and I was just blown away by Johnny Depp and, the whole cast, Keira Knightley and, the guy who ended up playing Legolas. What is his name? Oh. He plays the blacksmith. I'm going to look it up right now. But yes, so I remember where I was for that movie and the, as I say, reverberations of that movie afterwards. Because what I'm talking about is you can meet pirates at a con. You go to a Comic-Con, I guarantee you there's probably a pirate cosplay group. And if not, you'll probably at least see a couple of pirates. Maybe even Jack Sparrows at a Comic-Con or a Renaissance Festival. 20 years later, still happening. Your thoughts?
There's pirate days at Renaissance festivals.
That's right.
So yes, you will see a pirate at a Renaissance festival if you go on that same day. You'll probably see pirates regardless. But
Curse of the Black Pearl.
Yes.
Where were you? Do you remember? Oh, or when, no, do you remember seeing remember. It? Do you remember?
Oh yeah.
Your thoughts about Orlando Bloom?
Yes.
But your thoughts about it?
I loved it. It was great. I love that she was one of I didn't love that she was the only female named female.
There were two.
What was the other one?
There was the witch. The
Okay, in the first movie, there was a witch?
Yeah, wasn't there?
No, that was the second one.
Is IMDb lying to me now? Because my memory is horrible, but it's saying that... Oh, no. Really, that was Zoe's... there was a second woman, but she barely had a speaking part. She was on the crew. A person of color. She has a small speaking part. It was actually Zoe Saldanara, but she does get a credit as a name as Anna Marie.
Did they ever talk?
The two female characters, no. It does not pass the test.
Okay.
It does not. I was just pointing out that there is another female character that does have a name, but she has she's on the crew of the Black Pearl. She speaks once or twice at the most. She's in the rest of the movies, which is cool, if I remember correctly. But then again, I couldn't remember Orlando Bloom's name, so what the hell do I know? Yes, there were two female characters. But go on, sorry, I apologize.
And so that is the only critique I really have of that movie, of that franchise, really. But it kind of goes with history that it was a male run, but there were female pirates, so it just kind of, there were pirate kings and queens
in the series.
No, in real life too.
Yeah, very. There were.
There's Red Ann and, anyways.
Going down a history lesson here.
I am. I'm sorry. So, I liked it. I was, what
2003? So you were probably in school still?
No.
Out of school?
I was out of school in Phoenix.
Okay.
I didn't have any friends.
I had like one or two at the time. So like if I know I saw it with somebody. I just can't remember who. Like,
no, I had just moved to Phoenix, so I was, no, I had friends. And we probably went to see it, but I know it was in theaters.
We're all having fun here, just reminiscing on this.
Yeah, sorry, not more interesting. I'm boring.
So if Pirates of the Caribbean, the Curse of the Black Pearl. One of the things it does have problems with is it does have a lot of white people in it. There are people of color in it, again. Again, 2003 was not exactly a more enlightened time, per se. 20 years ago, sadly, you still have these problems.
Yeah, they didn't have no person of color had a starring role.
No. I'm looking at it right now just to double check. But
until the second one.
Your four main characters are white. Your bad guy's white. You have Zoe Saldana as one of the pirate crew. You have Michael Double Williams as one of the pirate crew. And I'm scrolling down, and I think it's going into the other movies because I see Bill Nye, who plays Davy Jones, and he was not in the first movie.
Nope.
And Naomi, but Bill Nye's white. I understand. I'm not trying to say he's of a person of color. I'm just saying that the cast member list they're giving me doesn't seem to add up to the first movie only, which is what I asked for. Because the internet is always perfect, people. It works so well all the time. But yeah, from what I'm seeing here, and from what I'm remembering for that first movie, there are people of color and diversity to a degree for the crew, but as far as speaking parts and, you know, starring roles, you didn't. The main people were all of white.
Yeah.
Heritage, I guess, is how you would put that. Color.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's a bit problematic. I feel like in today's modern era, you would probably, if they redid Pirates of the Caribbean, if they did the reboots that they keep talking about, it would definitely be a more diverse cast with speaking parts and, like, main characters. And
you say that, but then they've made them further into the future, and what have they done? Like,
well,
did they make it more diverse?
Trying to think. The second one, no. The first three movies didn't get more diverse. It kept the same cast and crew for the most part. Right. You did have the witch. She was a main character.
Right.
David Jones is a love interest.
Right.
And
she was
So, I mean, that's a little bit of progress, I guess, but not really. And then you had in the Stranger Tide, no. The one where they go to the Fountain of Youth. You have Captain Jack, his former love interest
Penelope Lopez.
Yeah, you know, and so she's of Hispanic or Latin heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit, but again, I feel like you're just treating one female for another female person of color. So yeah, you're not really progressing. You're just changing.
Yep.
The characters. So, no. I guess not. I guess they really didn't learn their lesson.
No.
But, I mean, that could be... Not that it's right, but, I mean, I guess it could be historically accurate. I mean, were most pirates Caucasian?
No.
And listeners, for those who... Because since we have yet to actually make this podcast a video podcast, which maybe someday we will, there was definitely a look of confusion and contemplation on my face because I was trying to actually think about that because I really don't know. I love pirates, but I don't really know all the history as I should.
No, because we give you books and you don't read them.
That's right. I'm more of a documentary history kind of person. I don't read about history. I really enjoy documentaries. Give me a good documentary any day and I'll sit there and I'll just watch it for 2, 3 hours, 4 hours. But you give me a book about history and I'm like, this is too much like school. I don't want to do.
So we stopped giving him books.
But 20 years of these from this movie.
Yep.
And it did start a whole renaissance, as I was saying. There was a Pirates of the Spanish Main mini ship game that you would buy, and you could actually, they're little cardboard pieces that you would build the ships. I actually still have a few of them somewhere around here. That came from directly from that movie, basically. Like, they didn't have the licensing, so they had to call it different names. But there was a ship called like the Black Swan in that. There was that game that unfortunately died after a few years, but it got popular enough that they actually made a role playing book for it. A tabletop version. What else did we get during that time for pirates? Like, it was a huge deal. There was pirates everything. That's probably where we got the pirate days for the Renaissance festivals and stuff.
Right.
Because before that, there was never any pirate days at any of the Renaissance festivals. I remember.
No. And 7C already existed before then, so.
Oh, really? 7C role-playing existed before?
Yeah, I believe so. Let me look.
If you don't know what 7th Sea is, I think we might have discussed it during the role-playing episode, but if not, we can talk about it a little bit here, and then we can talk about it more in a future episode. 7th Sea is a RPG by the very talented John Wick, not the Keanu Reeves character. And it's a very different system, not D20 system at all, but it's basically a pirate role-playing game.
It's a swashbuckling.
Yeah, swashbuckling. It's pirates, basically. Yeah. That's why it's called 7th Sea. But, yeah, the Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl. I keep saying The Curse of the Black Pearl. The reason why I keep saying that is because all the other movies have this, like, extra title to it.
1999.
Oh, so it did come out. It was just a few years before Pirates of the Caribbean movie. What is interesting about this movie is... One of the little fun facts about it is that the Pirates of the Caribbean movie didn't always have that extra part to it, The Curse of the Black Pearl. It was. You can actually find posters, and I think even the very first teaser trailer just says Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right.
They added The Curse of the Black Pearl later, so that's kind of an interesting tidbit. You can meet Captain Jack... There we go. Sorry about that. We are having a second issues there. Captain Jack Sparrow at the parks with them because of the movies, and it's they changed the ride because of the movies at the Disneyland and Disney World.
Yeah, they did. They changed it completely.
So, the rides came first, and so that's why the movies exist. But then. They changed the rides to fit the movie.
Well, they've changed the rides several times. They've changed the rides to get away from women men chasing the women to men chasing the women for food. And then they changed it to the movie. And then they changed it like to its current incarnation.
They made it less sexist.
Yes.
Because before, as much as it the pirates be. Were chasing the women. And right. Now I think one of the women...
Is chasing the men.
Angrily chasing after one of the pirates.
Well, the men were chasing the women to go after them.
Right.
And then the one woman was chasing the man to go after him.
Okay.
And then they put food in there, so it looked like they were chasing them for food.
Okay.
Huh. And then it changed to its current incarnation.
Interesting. Learn something new. This is one of those movies that you might be asking why we're bringing it up or why I'm bringing it up. It's because there was a lot of guy liner, you know, eyeliner on guys, which is a very goth thing. I feel like goth pirate is definitely a look still, and it was born. And if it wasn't born from this, then I'll at least say it was resurrected because of this movie. So that's why we're bringing it up, because Jack Sparrow is very goth looking, very much so. And so that's why I really think Pirates of the Caribbean, the first movie... And all the movies, I guess, afterwards to a degree. But the very first movie, 20 years ago, was a very goth movie in its own way.
Yeah, I guess so. I think it's more of it forms its own geek realm.
Well, it's definitely big on the pop culture. Again, yeah. It's you can buy Pirates of the Caribbean practically anything these days. You'll see a lot of it. I mean, it's not as prevalent as it was 20 years ago, but I mean, you'll find cosplayers again dressed like Jack Sparrow or dressed like pirates. You can buy a lot of pirate stuff in general now compared to 20 years ago.
Yeah, you can find the Jolly Roger anywhere.
I mean, they made a Monopoly game based off the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
They make a Monopoly game for anything.
True. Very true. My brain just kind of stopped working there for a second. To me, it's definitely, it fits in the goth and the geek areas just because of, again, just the way they're dressed, the time period, the guy liner, all of it, I think, is just very, kind of got a goth feel to it. It's one of those movies that, it's very geeky, though, like I said, because it's a very quotable, a lot of movie quotes in that one.
Yeah, it's very, it has a lot of quotes in it. I can't think of one.
Oh, I can think of tons, because I was quoting that movie for so long. I see turtles.
Oh, yeah.
Because they ask him, well, how did Jack get off the island? He lashed two sea turtles together, and what did he use for rope? Hair from my back. And then the guy, and they're like, before he says that, they're like, turtles? Sea turtles? And then Gibbs, Mr. Gibbs, one of the best characters in that whole franchise, Jack's best friend, basically. He goes, I see turtles. And I used to say that way too often to my friends as a response to things. Other ones, why is the rum?
Why is the rum gone?
Yeah. That one was a big one. I feel like you could probably get that on a t-shirt back in the day.
Probably get a t-shirt now.
Try wearing a corset. Cruise.
You trying to wear a corset.
Yeah. Try wearing a bloody corset or something. I think that's how she says it.
Yeah.
That was in the trailer. And that was a big one. Yeah, there's quite a few quotable lines from that movie.
Yeah.
So 20 years. For the Pirates of the Caribbean. So 10 more to go before it hits 30. But by that point, these other movies we're talking about will hit 40. And God, won't I feel old at that point. Will Johnny Depp still be doing Jack Sparrow? Because the man seems to not stop.
No, he'll be doing Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, God. Let's talk about that real quick. Talk about, you know, hopefully you're not getting your news from us. The rumor has it that Nightmare Before Christmas live action, which I don't even know what the hell that's going to look like, is going to happen, and Johnny Depp is going to play Jack Sparrow, because there's a lot of Jacks. Jack Skellington.
He's just going to go by Jack for
right?
His second name.
So what are our thoughts on that, speaking of Nightmare Before Christmas, from much earlier in this episode?
I'm scared.
I just don't know how you do it. Like, Lion King, lions are real. You can take lions and put CGI masks, basically.
Okay, so I'm going to just go for it. We see Jack and Sally at the parks.
They're not good. I mean, Sally's good, because Sally is basically just a stitched-up ragdoll girl. Like, you can, as a human... That I won't say that's easy to do by any means, because I'm not gonna
Hollywood
say I can do
magic.
That.
Hollywood magic.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you can make Sally look good live action without too much Hollywood messing around with CGI. Right. She'll still look like a human that's a dead human that's been put together like Frankenstein. Jack, on the other hand, is
He's a skeleton.
Yeah, I don't see how you'd do that. Like, at the parks, he looks okay, but it's still a human with a giant, basically, light bulb on his head that's been painted like a skull. For anyone who hasn't been to Disneyland or Disney World during the Halloween time, when you can meet Jack and Sally in real life.
Or Oogie Boogie.
Or Oogie. Oogie's easy to do, though, too. Like that costume proves that at Oogie Boogie nights that they could do Oogie easily as well, live action.
Right.
With real effects. But then you have Jack. You have... The vampires would be easy to do, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Jack wouldn't be easy.
No.
The doctor wouldn't be easy to do.
At one point, he opens up and like, scratches his brain.
And then takes it out. Takes half of his brain out for the, right. the other... You've got, the axe guy would be easy, but like Lock, Shock, and Barrel would be kind of disturbing. I mean, they're basically children that are dead.
Nah.
Like that's the dark rumor basically on that one. You've got the werewolf. You've got the mayor.
The mayor whose head turns around.
Yeah, I mean
that's easy to do. We've seen it in real life.
We've seen an animatronic of it. Actually right. walking around talking. I don't know. I don't know how. Again, you can do it. You can do it in CGI.
Right.
But that's not
live action.
It might be an
Uncanny Valley, but.
Well, listeners, what do you guys think? Do you think this is a good idea? A live action Night Before Christmas?
Oh, I didn't say it was a good idea. That is not what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea either. I'm not a big fan of this idea. I hope it's truly a rumor and Disney does not go through with it. Of all the live-action remakes they've been doing, that's the one they should not be doing at all. Like, some of the live-action remakes are really good, but some movies you just can't do live-action. Do Hercules. Hercules, you can make live-action. They've already done a live-action Hercules, basically, in the 60s, and then those remakes of those movies, The Colossus, or... I can't remember what the hell they're called now. But you could do a Hercules movie and it would look pretty good, but you can't do Night Before Christmas. It's just not possible. I say that knowing that full well that if this does go through, I will still go see it because we have to.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to, it doesn't matter.
But Johnny Depp why Johnny Depp?
Because they can't help themselves.
See, I really think that this is why I think it's a rumor, because I'm pretty sure Disney has washed their hands of Johnny Depp after the whole Amber Heard trial. I mean, I think they've apologized and left on good terms because he won that trial. But he still didn't get his Pirates movie back that they took away from him. So I really don't think they would bring him on for that unless Tim Burton...
There was a Nightmare Before Christmas 2024 with Ed Sheeran doing the soundtrack as the voice as Jack Skellington.
For the singing part, probably.
For the singing part.
Did I say Mark Hamill?
Yeah.
As who?
The scientist.
Oh, dear God, people. So there's an IMDb for these things. That doesn't mean anything either?
No, this is a remake. I don't know what this is. People, we're going to have to look into this because it has... I'm just going to go through the cast real quick.
This is from IMDb, and it says 2024, which is unrealistic. Unless they, especially with the strike going on right now.
It has Selena Gomez as Sally, Mark Hamill as the scientist, the mayor is Kelsey Grammer, Ken Page is still Oogie Boogie. Santa Claus is Billy Crystal. Narrator is still Patrick Stewart. And then Locke is Keaton Nagel Cookie.
That's where it stops.
Shock is Andrea Greenball. And Beryl is Paxton Booth. So I don't know what is going on.
That's Ken. I mean... We had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Page, the voice of Oogie, at one of the Comic-Cons.
He's very nice.
He's a very nice man, but he's also very old. He's getting old, the poor guy. It happens to all of us, but I mean, I guess if he's only doing the voice, because, again, Oogie is one of those things where, like, I don't see them putting him in a suit to do it.
Right.
So if he's just doing, it's like Darth Vader, I guess. He could just, you know, somebody else can be in the suit, and then he just does the voice. That's weird. I wonder if that's real or not, or if IMDb is one of those really strange places. So you really just don't know what you're finding or what you're reading sometimes. It's kind of like Wikipedia. You hope it's accurate, but you're never 100% sure. But no Johnny Depp, so I guess that one is technically still a rumor. Kelsey Grammer as a
mayor. I don't know which one this is. We're going to have to look that one up.
2024 would be a little bit too optimistic. That would mean they would have to be filming now, basically.
Or it's already filmed and they're cutting.
No, which it isn't, because these rumors just came out that they're talking about doing this. At least for everything I've read. So, who knows?
It's a Nightmare Before Christmas 2 rumors.
That's even a bigger rumor. There's already been a Nightmare Before Christmas 2. That was the video game.
Yeah, Oogie's this Revenge. Was 3 days ago.
Wow.
From Screen Rant.
Screen Rant does a lot of rumor stuff, but you would think that Destination D23, which was happening the weekend we're recording this, out in Florida, they would have maybe possibly announced something if that was the case. Pardon for the background noise, folks. I had to take a drink. I mean, they announced the 8th cruise ship that they don't even have like a name for yet, but they still mentioned it.
I thought it was
Adventures the 7th. That's the one that's coming out next year. But the 8th one that's coming out in 2025, they still brought up and were like, oh yeah, and the 8th one's coming too. Cool. Okay, if they can announce that, they should probably be announcing Nightmare Before Christmas live action if that's going to be actually a thing somehow. Well, what do you guys think? Should there be a live action Night Before Christmas? Shouldn't there be? Who would you cast as Jack Skellington and Sally? Selena Gomez is an interesting choice. She's also like super young compared to Johnny Depp. That'd be kind of weird.
There's no Johnny Depp in that one.
Remember? I know. I'm saying if the rumor is true and they do eventually sign him,
she was just a voice.
The age difference would be really odd. So, I don't know. That'd be odd. So, who would you cast in a live-action Night Before Christmas? Let us know. GothGeekPod@gmail.com. TheGothGeekPod@gmail.com.
Yes, please get that right.
Yes. I don't think there's a Goth Geek Pod, but email. But just in case, make sure you put the word the in front of it. TheGothGeekPod@gmail.com. And before we finish this up, as always, give us a like, give us a follow, go to our shop, gothgeek.net, and buy some of our stuff, or subscribe on our Whatnot channel so you can find out when we're going to do live streams for our sales and whatnot. Also, I want to say thank you to everybody who came by and saw us at our most recent shows. We were at Game On Expo recently, we were at Tucson Comic Con, and
you so much.
A lot of repeating customers. So thank you for coming by and saying hello. And welcome if you're listening to the podcast for the first time. Let us know what you think of the podcast in general. Just shoot us an email. Let us know what you would like to hear. We would love to get more topics. So shoot us an email with what you would like us to talk about. Is it something goth related? Some goth anime maybe? I know our earlier episodes talked about that. Maybe it's RPG games, video games, bands. You know, goth is very music oriented. Maybe we should be talking about more of that. We don't talk about it much.
Right.
Like the Crux Shadows just had a new song or two new songs that they dropped out for free. And that's
you want us to talk about Birthday Massacre? Yeah, let us know.
Yeah. Let us know. TheGothGeekPod@gmail.com. I'm going to just keep saying it over and over again until it just gets stuck in your brain. No, I'm totally kidding. But I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening. I am Nicholas, and
I am RS.
Thanks so much, and bye.
Bye.